Welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. We're excited to announce that we will now be releasing these episodes every week on Wednesday morning. The best way to support us is by clicking subscribe and taking a moment to rate the podcast wherever you listen. If you'd like to support our efforts to keep the nonprofit Meditation Center open in Nashville, you can donate via the Venmo app by sending your donation to @WildHeartNashville. Or you can go to wildheartmeditationcenter.org and click the donate tab. Thanks for listening.
All right, what's up? Welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. This is Mikey Noschel. I hope you are well. And before I get started, it's less than a week away. We have the Wild Heart Spring Retreat coming up on May 24th through the 31st. And so it's Andrew Chapman and me teaching this week-long retreat, and it is in Hendersonville, North Carolina at Heartwood Refuge. If you want to learn more about this, visit our website, wildheartmeditationcenter.org, and you click the events tab and you can find all the information there, or you can go to heartwoodrefuge.org and find out more there. The topic I've picked out for today is the Buddha's advice to Rahula, which is from the Majjhima Nikaya number 62. So to contextualize this discourse, the Rahula is the Buddha's son. And so when the Buddha initially left his home, as the traditional story goes, the Siddhartha Gautama, who is the Buddha to be, he was dissatisfied with his life and he wanted to leave his home to find an end to suffering. So he left a family behind when he went on this journey to discover a path that ends suffering. And once the Buddha reached his goal and found an end of suffering, he went back to his family, and Rahula came for his inheritance. And instead of getting inheritance of money or land, what Rahula inherited was this holy life. And Rahula became a monk himself and studied under his father, the Buddha. So this discourse is really about a father's advice to a son, which I think is quite beautiful and interesting, because the Buddha's advice that we find for his son is quite different than I know what advice my father gave me. So as he was studying under his father, it was in tradition to only eat food that was freely given. The monastics would go from town to town begging for food, what they call alms round. And on this particular occasion, it was the Buddha was there, his father was there, Rahula was there, and they were on this alms round, and the Buddha was leading the pack, leading the way. And Rahula was behind the Buddha, and he was watching his father. He was much younger than his father. I'm not sure how old he was at this time, but he was younger than his father, and he was admiring his father. His father was a very strong, beautiful, tall, handsome man. And he was thinking, well, I'm going to grow up and be just like him. I'm going to grow up to be strong and beautiful and tall. And really, Rahula was just thinking like, damn, my father's sexy, you know? And he's like, I'm going to grow up to be sexy too. And something happened where the Buddha, it's not quite clear, but he caught wind of Rahula thinking these thoughts about how he's going to grow up to be so sexy like his father. And something interesting happened. Rather than getting flattered that his son's thinking he's sexy and wants to grow up to be just like him, the Buddha gave him advice. And he gave him advice to not cling to material form, not to cling to this body. And he even says, this is not mine. I am not this. This is not myself. So not clinging to this body as self is the lesson that he gave. And then he continues on this lesson of not clinging to the body as self with a lesson on the four elements. And so these four elements, while we may have a periodic table with all sorts of different elements now, we simplify this, and I feel like this is helpful in my practice. We look at this body is made up of the same exact elements as everything else. So we look at the earth element, we look at the fire element, we look at the wind element, we look at the water element. And then, you know, looking at this earth element, it's really just the hard parts, you know, the bones of the body, and the water element, the sweat and saliva, and the air element, the breath, the movement of breath, or even gas. And then the fire element, these things like digestion. And so we look at these aspects of the body so we don't feel so separate. I think that's really quality advice too, because so much of my suffering has to do with me being separate, me being alone. And really, so rather than thinking I am sexy, I am better than, the Buddha said, nah, don't think those thoughts, those are troublesome thoughts. Think you are a part of. So in other discourses, the Buddha said, don't think thoughts of I am better than you. Don't think I'm thoughts that I am better than. Those lead to suffering. But also don't think thoughts of I am less than, because those lead to suffering as well. And then there's this third one. Don't think thoughts of I am equal to. And on a relative standpoint, of course we want to think that like equality is a wonderful thing to go for in society. We want racial equality, gender equality. Of course, we want those things on a relative standpoint, but having these ultimate thoughts of I am equal to, or I am less than, or I am better than, leads us to a place of separateness. So this is the instructions of rather than less than, better than, equal to, I am not separate than. So just like all things are made up of these four elements, these of earth, wind, fire, and air, we are made up of the same thing. And then this discourse leads us on a journey of exploring what these elements are and how to contemplate them in a way to help us see, you know, this beautiful aspect of interconnection and belonging. So we begin with the earth element. And this is a list that he gives on how to reflect on this body as the earth element. And typically this is called the disgusting aspects of the body. And I'll go into that, why it's important and why it's helpful to look at the so-called disgusting aspects of the body. So he goes into the observation of head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lung, large intestines, small intestines, contents of the stomach, feces, or whatever else internal that is solid. Looking at all these so-called disgusting aspects of the body, I like how he starts with this earth element of looking at bone marrow, sinews, even like shit and piss. I think that's really helpful. While we want to contemplate these so-called disgusting aspects of the body, I don't think it's because we want to have aversion to the body. It's like, don't cling to your body because it's gross. I really don't feel like that's the message here. I think this is the lesson, since Rahula is thinking that the handsome aspects of the Buddha are sexy and desirable. That must mean the sinews and the pus and the blood and the, you know, these disgusting aspects of feces and piss and all of that aren't desirable. But if we look at this aspect of interconnection, something like feces can be considered gross, of course, but is it not beautiful? And this is the flipping of the script that the Buddha gave. Just because it may be gross doesn't mean it's not beautiful. And just because it's attractive and sexy doesn't mean it's beautiful. So this is what we get confused by. We think what is desirable, what is sexy, what leads to grasping and clinging, that is beautiful. But that's not the case. If you look at it in reality, something like feces can be very beautiful. So when I say this, it's if we look at our mindfulness practice, if we really take into our mindfulness practice in any posture, and that posture can be on the toilet, that if we take in food and we eat this earth element of food, and then this fire element arises in us, and that fire element digests the food, and out comes the feces, out comes the shit of another earth element that leads us on the same continuation to fertilize the food, or, you know, maybe not our shit, but an animal shit to fertilize our food, and that we are interconnected in this beautiful way. So looking at even our shitting, while it may be gross and disgusting, but really, like, reflect on how beautiful this is, that this body does this thing all on its own, and how this happens, and how it's necessary, and how it can be observable. And then he specifically goes into what I covered before, this water element of bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, urine, and whatever else. He kind of ends it with whatever else. That same reflection as, you know, blood, and you know, if you cut yourself and you see blood, and it may catch us off guard, but even the catching off guard is a beautiful human reaction. And the blood that's in our veins right now, how often do we reflect on the blood in our veins right now, and how that blood in the veins is pumping the heart, or the heart pumps blood? I'm not, you know, into that stuff, but any anatomy experts may be able to help me out with that. But this idea of reflecting on and have a mindful awareness of the blood in our veins right now, or the urine in our bladder right now, and observing that aspect in a contemplative, beautiful way. And then he moves on to the fire element. And this is specifically, he brings up digestion. Whatever we eat, whatever we drink, whatever we consume, we kind of naturally take for granted that this fire element will burn these calories and give us energy, and that we see that this is a universal trait of fire, that it burns and creates energy, and reflecting that this body does the very same thing. And I like the idea of using temperature in this element too. He doesn't specifically go into this, but even feeling the heat in the body right now, or the coolness in the body right now, is a great observation of how this body regulates itself as well. And then we move on to the air element. And this beautiful air element that happens, that we can observe it quite up front right now. Just like I said, like blood, we can't really observe the blood unless we cut ourselves. But the air is a beautiful way to keep mindfulness of these elements. And, you know, mindfulness of breathing is so helpful and so popular. And if you go to a meditation class, what's the thing you'll most likely learn is to bring your awareness back to your breath. As the mind wanders off, just come back to your breath. And when we're coming back to our breath, this is the instructions to observe the interconnected realities of this breath. That the plants give off oxygen, and we breathe in that oxygen, and we breathe out carbon dioxide, and then the cycle continues, that there is no separation involved in this. Can we surrender to the interconnection? Even some of these words we use in our instructions, know you are breathing. Breathing in, know you are breathing in. But there really isn't much you involved in breathing. It's not something you have to work at. You're going to breathe automatically. So it's helpful just to take a step back and look at this beautiful interconnection, this dance with air on the outside of surrounding us. Sometimes we forget about all of these, all the air around us, because it's invisible, all this invisible stuff around us. But we are quite reliant on this. This body is reliant and not separate from all this invisible stuff around us. And in this sutta, he does go into a quite lengthy description of mindfulness of breathing, but I'll keep that out for now. But he does call back into the element of earth towards the end, and which I think is helpful because it talks about an attitude of earth, that we have all these elements in us, but we want to lift up the attitude of the earth. And what he specifically says to Rahula, he says, just as people throw clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on the earth, and the earth is not repelled, humiliated, and disgusted by that, so Rahula, develop a meditation that is like the earth. And this is something my teacher, the Venerable Paniwadi, says, that the earth does not get offended. And a friend of mine developed these, like a mantra around this, that I am of the earth and the earth is not offended. And that's what he says to himself. I'm of the earth and the earth is not offended. And so as he up front says, like, people piss on the earth and the earth doesn't get humiliated or offended by this. Or, you know, people take craps on the earth, or they pour clean things and dirty things all over the earth. The earth doesn't get offended by it. And I think that this is the attitude in our meditation. When we're sitting in meditation and a thought arises that is a painful thought, can we just not get offended by that painful thought? Or a thought of grasping, a greedy thought arises, can we not be so impressed by the greedy thought in the mind? Can we just not get offended so much about that? To realize these thoughts are just a product of having a mind, not cling to that either. And of course, that we can look at the external aspects of not being offended. And sometimes this can be misappropriated, right? We don't want to be Buddhist doormats. So just as the earth has, you know, what we're discovering now, that we can't treat the earth in any way without any outcomes. We want to be the same way. So if you treat me a certain way, I may not take it personally, I may not be so offended, but if you try to treat me a certain way, there's going to be outcomes for that action. Just like we can't completely pollute the earth, we can't harm the earth without having outcomes of the earth. So if you treat me a certain way, doesn't mean I'm going to be friends with you, or doesn't mean I'm going to be around you much. I'm going to set a boundary. If you're continually mean, rude, violent, hurtful, there's going to be outcomes for those actions. But that doesn't mean I need to harbor resentment towards you. So I think there's a good evenness here, even in this analogy of the earth. If we harm the earth, there are outcomes for the harming of the earth. But the earth doesn't get offended. If you treat me a certain way, there are outcomes for treating me that way. And I won't harbor resentment towards you. And so these are the advice that the Buddha gave to his son, a nice father and son story, as Rahula thought about his sexy father and how he's going to grow up sexy. The Buddha caught this and was, that's a dangerous game you're playing there, to think you're separate than, the thinking I'm better than. It's a dangerous place. So hopefully this reflection leads us to a place to contemplate the interconnection and how we are not separate, and observe that, like, how we find things that may be sexy, attractive, graspy as beautiful, rather than maybe some of the disgusting aspects that are truly, genuinely beautiful and amazing. So thank you for listening. I appreciate y'all, and peace and love your way.